hip hop became meaningful for me as part of my identity, or a way to inform and shape my identity. It gave me a sense of belonging. Mm-hmm. It gave me a community to operate within. And it connected as well to my black heritage as well, because it's black music and the origins of it all and everything. It something about that was meaningful for me on that level as well. Mm. I don't think I was aware of this, kind of conscious of this at the time. Mm. I was just a teenager getting into music. I found fun, but I look back and realize that it meant a lot to me and means a lot to me in a broader way. Killer, killer. Podcast, KellerKellerOfficial.com.
Street Culture TV.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Send them up, Ignition. Ladies and gentlemen, Killer Keller Podcast, live and direct, Central London. As central as any of you folk would either want to be, try to be, or deserve to be. House sponsors the mighty GK Nifty Heads of a massive 100,000 play-to-earn NFTs to give away to the streets. Just hit the link in the description or go to gknifty.com and get ready for Hodder Wars Summer 2024. It's a beautiful, beautiful day in the world of street culture. We hot step and move about, trying our best to mind our own business and got ourselves into trouble. But trouble seem to have found me, in the form of a gentleman that takes me right back to my early days and a lot of your early days too. So you've got no excuses but to tune in and check out. This bloke has been a confidant, somebody that has been associated with all of my adventures around the globe. He's a UK hip-hop pioneer, collaborating with the likes of Lewis Parker, the ever-faithful DJ Mr. Thing, Doc Brown, Verb T. I mean, the list will go on. If you're into UK hip-hop, then you'll be a fool not to know this gentleman with a new release. He goes by the name of Essa.
Yes, bro. Thank you, man. Love the intro. Woo. Love it.
I mean, it's hard to kind of put it all into one bottle. Like, this has been a long time coming, this podcast, right?
It has, man. I'm glad to connect on this, and it's good to get an opportunity to kind of tell my story a bit.
Yeah, a bit of a deep dive, so to speak. How deep we go is another story. I mean, so you're a family man.
Mm-hmm.
You're a lawyer as well.
Lawyer, yeah, solicitor, yeah.
So don't fuck with Essa. All of this, these all tools and skills. And we were kind of just suggesting this at the start of the, before we started recording, wasn't it? The kind of mind juggle of that.
Yeah, it's difficult. So we're all busy people, and we're all grown ups. But I've got myself into a situation where I have lots of things that really matter to me a lot that I'm pursuing at the same time. My career as a lawyer, my career as an artist, and my life as a father, husband, friend, so there's a lot in my life. But it's a real blessing, It's a constant juggle. I'm having to figure out how to, balance things all the time. Mm. And each time you water one plant, another one is a bit thirsty. Mm. And then you've got to turn, your focus to elsewhere. But I'm getting a little bit better at it as I get, more sophisticated.
Do you think people are accommodating to that that weather that you have to kind of face? I mean, family, close family is one thing, but then those moments where you're just, hold on, I just got to get this phone call, and you're not, you're losing your own perspective, your personality. Things are hanging on the singular words you say. That must be quite challenging.
Some people get it. And some people less so. What has been working for me is that my two careers in particular, they overlap. So I'm a lawyer, but I'm a lawyer in the entertainment and media industry. Mm. So a lot of the people I know through music and the things that we talk about and the world I'm connected with through being an artist overlaps with what I do as a lawyer. And therefore it's not quite as much of a jarring kind of wrench when I jump from one world to the next, because actually they connect. And even more so, people that I've got relationships with as a creative become business relationships as a lawyer as well. So perfect example, the person that used to manage me is still a manager for lots of other artists, and he now brings a lot of his talent to me, and I can be their lawyer and I represent them, and we do business and we do deals together all the time. 20 years or whatever, you know, going strong, but just in different capacities, different roles, you know?
Wow, and there's no conflict of kind of interest there?
No, because he doesn't manage me now, and it's like a separate role, separate stage, I guess, of our evolving relationship together. Shout out to Mark.
Yeah, hold tight, Mark. Yeah. You know, time is that's incredible. Did you ever? I mean, you know, we'll go back as far as we need to go back. Mm-hmm. But did you ever think that your timeline of careers would kind of cross streams like that?
I always first saw it coming into conflict, and people were like, "When are you going to quit one or the other, and which is it going to be?" And I kind of couldn't get my head around the question in some ways because I'd always wanted to be creative. Used to love theatre and dramatic arts, and then got heavily into music, rap, and it's just always has been and will be a part of me. But was always also ambitious on the kind of career level with becoming a lawyer. In fact, when people used to ask me as a kid, what job are you going to have when you grow up? I would have said lawyer. I would have been like, I'm going to be a rapper, lawyer, because, well, African dad, like rapper doesn't count as a job.
Right, yeah.
Doesn't count. Like, so, you know, it was always the expectation that I'd be doing something else. Mm. And so I guess I was always pursuing the two and never really thinking, well, I just carried on that way, and it's carried on through to today, where I'm releasing music, I'm, you know, creating all the time.
You're so consistent, bro. You are so consistent. Like, I forget how many playlists I've got with your tune, one, two tunes on. Do you know what I mean? On the real, like, I sometimes you just, because someone's a constant, it's not taken for granted. But
I appreciate that. I mean, it's funny you say that, because for me, I feel like there have been big gaps in my output. But what people may or may not realise is that there's never been gaps in the creative act. Mm. Like, I write every day, pretty much. And I don't do that as like a sort of a discipline. It just happens every day. Like, I get ideas, whether it's one line that I just quickly jot down and keep in my stash, or whether it's a whole song that I end up recording. But like, it's pretty much every day. And it has been for a couple of decades. So I've got a lot of material. Doc Brown always like cusses me for this. He's like, so what? Like, you don't put any of this shit out. Like, no one even knows, bro.
Imagine a conversation between the two.
He just gives me like a real, tells me off about it.
Really?
With good reason.
Yeah, yeah.
But the creativity's there, but there's been gaps in the output. And because I haven't been able to join all the dots of, okay, I've made this stuff. How do I like finish it, get it mixed, get it, you know, like completed to the standard in the way that I want? I'm quite ambitious with that. And then also do a proper rollout and release it. And there's a lot of logistics involved. And that's got in the way when there's been so much other stuff in life for me. But I've kind of found a way through that now with the help of many, many great people. So I've got a whole team around me now of really loyal and, like, you know, talented people who are just contributing in lots of different ways to me being able to actually realise some of these ideas. And so I'm looking to now have a whole period of quite consistent output.
Delegation, isn't it? That's what that is.
It is, yeah. And it's learning, like, hold on, if I sort of sit on this job and try and do this myself when I get the time or make the space for it, then at best I might do an okay late job of that. Whereas if I know someone else who's actually really good at that and cares and wants to do it, then, and I ask them and we share, then it's going to happen more effectively. And part of the stumbling block for that for me was always a sort of, will anyone want to get involved speculatively in this thing, this grand dream I've got? You know what I mean? And I don't like to come to people with like, can you do this for me?
How do you nurture that though? Because you find somebody, this is, you know, it's almost like a kind of mirror of the, I think we all get to that point where it has to be delegated. Where do you find that sweet spot where there's a person who wants to get involved, but they can't get involved too much because they need to get paid by XYZ, or they want to be lawyers themselves or something like that, but the music is something they want to follow as a passion. Like, you're there in front of them face to face and you know they've got that talent, but how far down the line do you want to take that?
It's kind of listening, really. What I've experienced in the last year or two is realizing there's people around me that want to get involved. And people ask me, hey, what's going on with your stuff, bro? How's this, you know? And I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. And then some of them have been like, let me know if you ever need any help with this, that, the other. And now I'm like, yes, please. I would love that help. And let's talk and let's go straight. Whereas before I'd be like, oh yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Call you next week. Kind of thing.
And just don't really actually crystallize it. Whereas there's people who, you know, literally have like volunteered to get involved in various ways. And now we're like doing proper work together.
What's the thing? What's the thing that you wish someone would be delegative of a job for, to take off of your hands?
Oh my God, I've got so many of them.
Yeah, okay.
I hate time management. And I would love, I mean, I already have a superb secretary at my office as a lawyer who I literally cannot function without, you know. So she...
Can we have a name, please? We've got to big her up.
Shout out to Elaine.
Come on, Elaine. Hold tight, Elaine. big shout out to Ashley. That's mine. There's our go-to girls right there.
Amazing. Like, you know, so that's a huge part of being able to function. But I think the main one for me is kind of creating visuals to go with stuff. And I've got some amazing people around me who have been helping me just put out a documentary, actually, about my first album.
Wow.
Half-hour documentary, and it's like, it's amazingly well put together.
That's incredible.
Yeah, shout out to Ricky and Louie and Ben Coots and everyone that helped me with that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm looking to get into a rhythm of regularly creating visual material because I've now got the kind of machine in place to create the music to the standard that I want, with enough people around me and a way to get it to final product, you know, and like top quality. But on the visuals, I'm still working at how to get that as an efficient process. I can get there sometimes, but I always find it a challenge. And it's not, I don't think I grew up in that world, you know, like it's different. I think there's...
Hey, you just came to rap, man. Yeah. That's really what it is.
Just about the bars.
Yeah. Dude, I'm there as well. Just, you know, give me a mic. Right. You know, what's funny is that I think all of a sudden, maybe this is age. Maybe it's wisdom. Maybe it's knowing full
maturity.
Well.
Maturity. Maturity, that's not age.
See, things like that, see? So it's just the idea of going beyond what our original plan was. And at this point in our careers, understanding that, okay, that's how the machine worked. This is how it works now. This is why I don't want to be part of that machine, but I can create this machine. Mm. I can do that myself. And I think everyone that at least has some sort of finger on the pulse within the scene that they're in, they can do it, can't they?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of knowing what where you fit in and what you can offer and you know what others can offer and how to match that together. You know, I know what I'm good at. I know what I'm less good at, and I know what I enjoy doing and don't enjoy as much. And I'm just trying to find the right ways to fill out the whole team where there's somebody out there that loves to do the bit that I'm not so keen on, you know, and just that's the way to win together.
I always wonder why do you love that role so much? Like trying to get some hands for years.
Bro, I'm a lawyer. Like people are literally, the bit that I do as a lawyer, people are like, that is the bit that I cannot touch, cannot stand.
Yeah.
And there's me like going through the contracts and thinking about all sorts of technical issues, and I get an intellectual stimulation from that. I find that rewarding on some level, you know.
Wow! Like in the same way,
people hate it, you know.
But that must be the same case with writing. That's why you do it every day.
It's very connected because, to me, it's all to do with language and communication. You know, expressing things through words, understanding things through words. You know, but then with the legal stuff, there's this extra element where the communication is between two or more parties, and you've got to think not just about your perspective and what you're trying to achieve, you've got to think about their perspective, what they want to achieve. Maybe there's 2, 3, 4 different parties, and you've got to find the balance. I do deals. I don't do cases. I'm a deal maker, you know. And so you've got to think about how things come together, and I find that interesting. The creative act is in some ways more simple. Like it's me creating, and then there's whoever may hear it and respond to it. And actually, I think on a good creativity, you try and think less about the world out there responding to what you're creating. You try and just focus on creating and expressing and leave the response to the world. You just give it up and it's up to people to just, you know, make up what they will.
Man, you just set my mind into a theory. Like, for a long time now, just the whole idea of a kind of invisible game of chess that you have to play, just in life in general, really. I mean, you're playing it in real time all the time with really big money involved and big cases and not cases, but you know, deals.
Yeah,
you know, that's some mad discipline.
Yeah, discipline is like a big part of it, and it's how I grew up. You know, I'm of mixed heritage, English and Nigerian.
Mm-hmm.
And from the Nigerian Igbo part of my culture, and some of this is specific to my own particular family,
mm-hmm.
but my father's side of the family this is, and my father was disciplinarian.
Mm-hmm.
And there's quite a big culture of that, many different cultures, but certainly Nigerian, other African families as well. Mm. Like I hear a lot of people say, yeah, of course, like, you know, African parents, they have certain expectations.
Mm.
And discipline was a key part of it. And a lot of the drive and ambition and the kind of professionalism I have, parts of that I attribute to that aspect of my upbringing,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's this whole other side of it that I got through my mother and through just growing up in the way that I did, where there's kind of a balance to me and other sides to me as well.
North London.
Yeah, North London. Yeah.
Nice, nice. Not too far from these neck of the woods, to say the least. What was it like? I mean, let's go for the jugular. What was the grab of hip hop at its time for you and music as a whole?
So, I think I've come to understand this better with hindsight and with maturity.
Maturity.
Not age, because I'm actually pretty young.
Yeah, I know. He's 72.
But. At the time, I was just like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. This is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
It was rebellious. It was all these other things. And that excited me and grabbed me. And the era we're talking about is early 90s. And it's things like records that got me into it. Actually, before even realizing, I was already into like De La Soul, because my older sisters would play 3 Feet High and Rising. And I remember getting a Frosties packet with a flexi disc of I Know, I think, inside it.
Wow, that's crazy.
Which I was like, oh wow, and I played that with my cereal kind of thing. But then that was before I even really knew what rap was or hip hop. I didn't really understand as a whole culture. I just was like, I like this thing, you know?
Yeah.
And then it was probably Snoop's first album, 93,
wow.
When I was like, okay, now I'm aware of hip hop and this being a thing. And this is now a thing that I'm really into. Mm-hmm. And it became quite defining for me.
Wow.
And it went from there, and I listened to previous stuff and just stayed in tune with everything since. But I guess the thing that came with hindsight, I was just alluding to a moment ago, is there was a sort of community to belong to. And it meant something for me on an identity level. So growing up mixed heritage, being raised in a very middle-class, white environment, but having my black identity as like a core part of who I am as well, and going between lots of different worlds, as I still do. We talked about it earlier on in different contexts, but like, I go between lots of different worlds. This is a very common trait for a lot of mixed heritage people. Identity is always a question to which there's a complex answer for me. And hip-hop became meaningful for me as part of my identity, or a way to inform and shape my identity. It gave me a sense of belonging.
Mm-hmm.
It gave me like a community to operate within, and it connected as well to my black heritage as well, because it's black music and the origins of it all and everything. It something about that was meaningful for me on that level as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I was aware of this kind of conscious of this at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was just a teenager getting into music I found fun, but I look back and realize that it meant a lot to me and means a lot to me in a broader way,
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I think this is the curious thing about hip-hop, and it really hones in on your circumstance. My state, and I say that because for a lot of people, entry holes like Snoop Dogg, it's reasonably unrelatable from a UK standpoint.
The stuff he was singing about was nothing to do with my life.
No. I mean, we do get the odd low rider going through fucking, Harrow Road. But the truth is that you enter in a portal to that and you find the thing that is almost, there's just so much hip hop in there. There's decades and decades and decades, and you find, I was never like, dare I say, I wasn't the biggest De La Soul fan.
Right.
The Native Tongues thing up against NWA, forget it. Like, I'm NWA. But this is the point, isn't it? It's that you find something, and then, but there's, everyone loves it all. That's the other thing as well, because there's multiple art forms that are happening, aren't there?
Well, the thing is, as well with hip hop is to be an appreciator of hip-hop culture is to appreciate many other genres and cultures as well. Yeah. So I love jazz, I love soul, you know, and many other forms of music, and you know, that people use as the building blocks to create hip hop, you know. And I started to again learn that retrospectively. So formed a lifelong connection and partnership with Mr. Thing, and he educated me on music. I had this the deep privilege of touring around with Thing, and we would drive in from, you know, to different shows and stuff, and we'd hop in his car and he would like play me a bunch of beats he's just made, and then we would turn those into records. But then he'd also be like, have you ever heard what was used to make this record and that? And he would play me these like classic soul records.
Crazy.
And that made me a huge fan of soul music, you know, ever since. But then there's all sorts of other, you know, lanes and genres. And to me, that's hip hop, to understand that stuff and to be into it. So it kind of became my education about music in general, was to get into hip hop.
Mm, yeah, Mr. Thing is an absolute beast when it comes to...
Mr. Thing, man, shout out.
When I was younger, we was touring a lot, and the amount of records that I walked away with thinking to myself, did I need them? Yeah, no, Mr. Thing said I needed them.
Literally says, you need that.
Yeah.
He's just handed them to me, like, you need that.
Yeah. So I'll buy them. 30p, get it. You know, it's literally the weight alone in the flight is just like extra 57 quid, isn't it?
It's like, you know, they talk about collateral damage. This is like collateral benefit. Just be around him and like extra good stuff happens to you.
It's so true. It's enriching, particularly from a music point of view. And you're right, because I think, and I'm not saying this isn't applicable in most genres nowadays, I think that it can be quite overwhelming for people to want to get into a scene that has so much depth. Mm, you know, like the idea of me being like wholeheartedly super all involved in reggae right now, right. All I think to myself is, oh my God, that's just it's just a winding road of stuff I don't know.
Well, you know? There's definitely, there's a sort of exclusiveness of some sort where it's like, to be part of something, you need to be initiated. You need to pay your dues, all these things. And, like, there's a strange thing, and I think this also appealed to me on some level, where, like, I've always felt like an outsider. But when it comes to hip-hop, I feel like I understand and I know. Mm. And I've paid my dues and I've done my research and I feel like I have earned my right to have a seat at the table of some sort. And therefore, I have to resist the temptation to then get a bit, I'm going to call it snobbish, like about like those that maybe haven't quite gone that journey or like don't understand the culture and they're just sort of throwing themselves into stuff. I think I have to, you know, not be too snobbish about that because you don't want to like be snooty, but I'm being very real about the fact that something about that also appealed to me. I talked about a sense of belonging and a sense of identity. Well, with that, you know, part of that was a sense of like being included in something that not everybody knew about or understood, you know?
Yeah, community. And
community.
They all kind of stemmed, just segues nicely into the Deal Real era, the old and new Deal Real, the record store culture and how important that was, particularly for the age that, you know, we enter into these scenes. You know, you can just readily jump into a club scenario, you know, and meet these heroes on stage or behind the decks, you know. These were like opportunist moments, weren't they?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of the path that I went on and where opportunities really opened up, it all came gradually and organically. And there were certain key people and key sort of connection points. So best example and the, you know, obvious first one for me is meeting Harry Love, who still to this day, one of the most talented, you know, producers I've ever known.
Hands down.
And he was the first producer I ever met. And so the first time I actually made proper tunes, you know, till then it was like freestyling over people's beats and maybe even writing a whole song, but over someone's beat or whatever, not like, as in over an instrumental on the beat side of a 12 inch. And then when I finally met him, suddenly we were able to actually make records, you know, make songs. And I love to just spit on a beat, but I really love songs and writing a song. And he has the craft, you know, and so we put stuff together. And then he just introduced me to all sorts of people because he was young at that time. We both were young, but he's a few years younger than me, but he was already part of Scratch Perverts and he was like doing shows and
elevating
routines
fast,
and like that was at a time in particular when the turntablism was really like taking off as a thing that everyone was like in awe of.
Plus, and, he had the SPs. He was an enabler.
He really was. He contributed a lot to that whole thing, you know. So it was. Yeah, he made a huge difference. Introduced me to lots of people, and you know that whole world of record shops. You know, I would just go from one to the other, like for whole chunks of the day, and then people like Harry would be like, "Oh, have you met this person? You need to know them." And I'd meet them, and it's just kind of gradually building my familiarity and connection with that community and that scene. And I learned as I went along. You know,
it's a golden, gorgeous time of it, wasn't it?
It was wonderful, yeah. And it's, you know, I have to resist the temptation to sound like a kind of moaning old man now, but what I will say is I worry that some of that may... Either it's, it just doesn't happen in that same way because so much of that connection happens online now. And that's got good things about it or bad things about it. Like, one of the good things is that can happen internationally. I had to connect in London with people within, like, arm's reach sort of thing.
And broaden out.
Broaden out from there. But, like, you know, there are people who could be in LA or, you know, Thailand right now, like, checking out the stuff that we're doing. And that is another, you know, way of connecting. But there's something nice about that in-person...
100%.
...sort of just natural, organic, social way of stuff growing.
Yeah.
Maybe it still just happens, but I'm an old guy. I don't really go... No, I'm not old. I'm mature.
Mature guy.
But I'm not really hanging out like that as much like I used to. I'm too busy working or parenting or creating.
Yeah, and I think the parenting, you know, and also the... You know what I was coming to is the quicker people get to know that the handshake is far more important than the profile or the business card. Like, I think that's what it is at the end of the day, because that's what creates that community, these community moments, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's, there's genuine connection, you know?
Yeah.
I do like a lot of networking as part of my job as a lawyer. And I've even been to classes and training sessions about how do you work a room? How do you network in an effective way? How do you build all these different things? There's loads of thinking on it. But what I would say kind of really rings true from all of that is some level of genuine human connection is important, because without that, it's all just surface level.
Yeah.
If it's like, hey, I'm Nick, I'm a lawyer. Here's my business card. You need a lawyer? Call me.
Yeah.
Like, that just washes over people. They don't really, you know. But if you actually have a decent conversation or you find the common ground, find a way that you actually connect, then it's like there's much more likelihood that that could lead to something mutually beneficial.
But performing live and being, you know, in amongst people, strangers sometimes, especially at a young age, I mean, that's enough to give you, like, I can work any room because I know exactly the coordinates. You know what I mean?
It's interesting that. I mean, it took a lot for me because I'm not an outgoing personality. You know, I'm kind of more the shy observer type. Like, thinks and watches what's going on. I'm not the first one to speak up about stuff, typically. That's changed over time. And, you know, some people that know me now would be surprised to hear me describe myself that way.
Yeah.
You know, but it took me a while. And also to perform and to get up on stage in front of my peers or the people I wanted to be my peers, there was pressure.
And I
found that, and it was daunting, especially also goofy middle-class kid from like a leafy sort of suburban area going to like these quite edgy hip-hop shows, like, you know, and I was young as well, and like, just, you know, it was difficult for me to navigate. And also to be, well, what became important to me was to be authentic, to be myself. I didn't want to be like this guy's pretending to be.
It's the only way you survive in those environments.
You've got to be authentic and be real. And so I just kind of stuck to that.
And, you know. I can relate with that, being from outside of London, man. Something is like, I'm off to flame. Something drives you into that space. What is that thing?
I mean, I think it's partly that acceptance thing that I talked about before, like wanting to be part of something, you know. I just love the craft. I love the art form. Like, I love putting words together. I love seeing, like, masterful craft, you know, on a musical level, lyrical level.
Let's stick
with
the craft.
And that just drives me to it.
Let's stick with the craft for a second, because, the timbre, the sound, the vocal that you have, and I'm saying this hands down, I'm like, that's something special. Like, I love the tone of your voice on record. Couple that with, you mentioned, you know, all forms of music and, you know, crediting Harry Love for his production value, which makes it more than just an average beat. But you also have a way of structuring your songs. Do you know what I mean? Then there's the lyrics themselves. I mean, there's a lot. There's a thesaurus. There's a language here we can talk. But yeah, for real, like, talk to me about the craft. Talk to me about the disciplines. Talk to me about how you process. And who, more importantly, are your influences?
So, I mean, the craft is multifaceted, you know, because there are people who I think have got a witty turn of phrase and they can entertain, but they might not stimulate a lot of thought, or they might not be able to craft like a sort of song really has like strength as a song, you know. There's people the other way around. Like, they can craft great songs, you know, and whatever else, but could they just put on a beat and ask them to spit and they're not going to impress the room. They're just, people be like, so the goal has been, and that's just two metrics, that's just two different, the goal for me is always to try and do as well as I can on all those aspects of the craft, you know? And you talked a moment ago about vocal tone and, you know, cadence and like this, this stuff. Part of that is natural in the sense of my voice is my voice, but also I project my voice and I kind of do things with it as I record and when I'm performing live. And that's another parameter to play with, you know? And so there's all these different things at once. And I'm just trying to be the top trump card, you know, with like 10, 10, 10, 10, 10.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what I'm going for.
But not a lot of people can, and you know, there's so many reasons why one of the 10 is just the downfall. You know, it's there's degrees of you know, great or greatest, isn't
That's it? And you asked me about the influences. Again, there's just so many. Like, some have influenced me in respect to that one particular aspect of the craft that they shine in, you know. But there's a handful of people that have got that top trump card, like 10 in every category. There's very few, but a good example for me is Black Thought, who can do everything.
He can do it all
To a very high standard. Another one is Getz. Getz can do all the different aspects of the craft to a very high level. And there's many, many more, you know, but like that whole like complete approach where, you know, I've heard both of those people write very thought-provoking songs. I've seen them just jump up and body a verse as well to the point of like fear in them amongst the other MCs around. fear.
You know what? You know that another guy that I've seen kind of that fear is, and I won't say where or when, Dougs.
That
he evokes fear.
Fear. Because, like, you can't do that, can you? He can do that, but you can't do that.
No. As in, he's, you know what he just did there? You can't do that. He just gone and done it.
He just does it like it's natural. Like,
just the way he skips, just the...
The change of pace, the cadence, the like he, and again, like multifaceted, you know, like because he's not just like blah 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 blah, like he's saying some thought provoking stuff as well, and also for someone like me as well, like you play my music next to his, he's got like a broad range of different styles and sounds, but like
genres,
they're not this, like, you know, put it this way, he's more from a grime world, I'm more from a hip hop world. Within the hip hop, it's more the kind of soulful jazz influence side of it. There is actually overlap because I've heard him on tracks like that as well.
Yeah, he did that Son of Noise remix as well. That was sick.
Right. I'm trying to go and look that up. But like, you know, I get inspired by people who people wouldn't expect, where like they listen to my style and my sound and they wouldn't realize I might appreciate someone like a Dougs because, but I appreciate him for what he does within the craft. And craft is craft. Like, I admire it, you know, as a thing in itself. When you can see someone really good at what they do, that's inspiring, even if what they do is quite different to what I do.
Yeah. I think with a lot of these conversations, when we're talking about influences and, you know, how we get by in creating, being inspired, these are early incremental stages of development where by the time you get to, I'm putting out my records, mm-hmm. I'm putting out my releases, I know what I am, I know my thing, and then the industry kind of, the business kicks in. Mm. And obviously being a lawyer has a huge home field advantage. Mm. But you again, it just goes back to those double head things where it's like, okay, so I'm coming to this because, you know, off the bat, there was a level of conversation on recall. You're out doing lawyer thing, come inside here, it was almost like reset. It's that kind of discipline that you have to install in once you get into that music industry aspect, isn't it?
Yeah, you have to be able to switch between different scenarios. Yeah. In fact, as a lawyer, a key, especially a kind of deal-making lawyer of the kind that I am, you need to look at things from different perspectives.
Mm.
You can't just look at it from your own perspective of what you want to achieve. Some people do, and that can be quite a, in my opinion, unsophisticated approach. Because if I want to achieve what I want to achieve, I need to know what the other people are trying to achieve as well. Because somewhere, there's probably that zone where it works for everybody, you know? So we're also, whenever you're receiving pushback, you know, there's a negotiation scenario, you're trying to put yourself into the shoes of the other party and think, well, why are they approaching it this way? What matters to them?
Mm.
And something about that shift, that skill of shifting perspectives, I think is useful as well in the kind of lifestyle I have where I have to shift from one thing to the next all the time, you know? Think about different worlds and different stuff that's going on. I think it's a skill that I've been trained in.
Yeah, and it's not a skill that you can readily have as an artist.
I don't think so, but one thing I would say is there's a level of that that is also something that comes from the nature of my upbringing and my heritage.
My
mixed heritage.
Yeah.
Where I never felt I particularly fit within one category or place in the world, one group, whatever, you know. So I'd always think about that perspective and then also that one because both were part of my experience. So that became an early trait of mine. Again, this is something I've learnt with maturity. But it's been a trait of mine throughout my life, and I've been fortunate to cultivate it.
Yeah,
and to find a way for that to be part of what I do with my careers.
Does that cultivation extend into the releases of the record, like the influence of the songs?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm trying to get better at the full process. And the creative act is like my favorite bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a tree falling in the woods if you create a great record and no one ever hears it. Yeah. What's the point? No one even knows it happened.
Yeah.
So you have to do the whole process. And I'm trying to think about, inherent in that is thinking about how it's received on some level. And I'd struggle with that because I think that is counter to creativity. To think a lot about how it's received.
Yeah.
If that influences the way you create, that can lead to substandard creation, you know. And I've been as guilty of this as others would be. So where you kind of, I want to make a tune like this. I want to be where that person is. So if maybe I can make a, you know, club banger, or I can make a this, that. And when they made that club banger, that person you've been inspired by, they were just doing their thing.
No, yeah. They weren't, right, today we're going to put A and B in together, we get.
They just create, and that's what they're like, and that's what they do, and they make that sick thing, and I'm jealous of them. But, like, equally, when it comes to stuff that I do that some people don't do so well, or they get inspired by because they're like, how does he do that? That's me being me, in my own lane, and doing what I do, so some of the deep lyricism stuff or the kind of vulnerable, like the poetic type stuff or that insightful stuff, that's me. Like, that's what I do. So,
and not everyone will be able to hit that shelf of the record of people's collections.
And not everyone appreciates it. Like, some people are like, I don't really care about that. I was speaking to someone recently, an artist who I really like, who was also, they said, inspired by me. But they're like, I hate bars and spitting and that kind of, and I don't like any, I just like songs, you know, when people rap.
Yeah.
And it was a really interesting thought because I was like, wow, I love bars, I love lyricism, but I also love songs. But they were like, no, leave me with all that rap stuff. Like, and I get it. I get it because they're like, you know, you don't need to, you know, force that upon me. Like, yeah, you can rap well, like, great, but show me a song and make it catch, make it feel good.
Yeah.
Give it a vibe.
Yeah, I get you. It's cool in a skit and everything, but when you're actually making songs that are relentlessly drive, bars, yeah.
You need balance, you know, and like, I've reached a point, I feel, where I'm getting better and better at that balance. So the new album I've been working on, just finished an album.
What's it called?
It's called Resonance.
Resonance.
By me and Pitch 92. It's a collab album, me and Pitch 92 together. And this is like, from my perspective, it's probably my most complete and balanced body of work so far.
How exciting.
Yeah, I'm very, very proud of it. Like, you know, I enjoy listening to it.
You know what? I bet it also helps the perspective, you know, you step away a little bit more when you know it's in collaboration with someone, a trusted producer that you know he's got ears on it as well. You do get this opportunity to remove yourself a bit more, don't you?
You do, and like, you know, we make creative decisions jointly, you know, and that kind of... it brings the best out, I think, you know? He's been very easy to work with. The kind of interesting thing that we didn't know each other from way back, but I knew of his work and other people had told me. I remember Verb T saying to me one day, you need to connect with Pitch one day. You two would make a great thing together. And I was like, oh, okay. I checked him out. But then it was years later that we actually connected. But as soon as we did connect, he was like, I've got some beats that I thought you might like to hear and let me check these out. And the hit rate in terms of like when I'm played beats by people is often quite low, as in like, it's not that I'm like super, okay, I am picky, but like as in I'm trying to find the one that really suits me.
Yeah.
And there's some beats that are sick that I wish it suited me, but actually it doesn't. So
it's like a 3 in 10 or something, something bangs. But
this is 9 out of 10. And he's like, do you like this? Yeah. Do you like this? Yeah. Do you like this? Yeah. And I was like, I came away with like a whole stash of beats and I made a record out of, I made a track out of every single one.
Wow.
Like we just, and bam, there it is, an album.
How long did it take to do?
Well, the early stage of it was fast in terms of like quick ideas getting together. But then I have this like grand ambition with stuff where I'm like, that beat and a rhyme is great, but we need to have someone singing there. Mm. I'd love to have more instrumentation on that.
This is the technical bit. This is when it becomes long.
It's long. And I'm guilty of this. I need to do one where it's literally a beat tape and I just rap on the beats.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, don't
let it go.
But I cannot help myself because I'm like, oh, if this could be like that. Yeah. And actually what's amazing on this project is we've done all of that. Many projects in the past, it's been like, oh, if only we could maybe, but like there's him and there's an engineer producer that we've been working with called Viva C, who I've been working with in a different capacity before. Nice. Incredible producer and multi-instrumentalist and mixing engineer, mastering engineer. His sonics are off the chart. And he came on board as, like, I call him the finisher. You bring something to him that's like 75-80% there and it's just hands it back to you and you're like, oh my God. That's like, and he just adds bits, he can sort of help realize your vision, you know, in a way that's faithful to what you've done, you know.
Need them in life in general, man. For everything in life, the extra 20% is everything, isn't it?
It's everything, you know. And his own stuff is incredible as well.
Really?
Seriously.
Getting a record to the point that you're exceptionally proud of it, you can listen to it over and over again, you've not burnt your ears out with it. Mm. I mean, that's a celebration itself. But
it is. And it's funny, like I'm trying to learn to be more smell the roses in my approach to life, where I'm always part of this thing we talked about earlier with the drive, the discipline, the ambition, all of that, is I'm relentlessly following the next goal all the time, which can actually be a slightly it's a hard path because you don't really enjoy the fruits of your labor.
Oh my God, you're so
just
right.
Labor.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to appreciate when I have moments that are a win to celebrate. And what you just said of like completing a record and loving it is a win. And like literally that's the Grammy there. Yeah, like it's done and I've made it and I'm like happy. And it's coming out, you know, it's on its way. It's in the pressing plant right now.
Come on.
So it's like that is a win to celebrate. And I did celebrate that, you know what I mean? Like,
what did you do?
I think I opened a bottle of champagne.
That's right.
And drank it.
So yeah, drank it all. Yeah, fucking right.
Not on my own. I was probably with my wife.
Yeah. Can't be selfish with things like this.
No,
it's a celebration for everyone. And time actually helps progress that. Yeah. When you've got time to make the best decisions of a song, the best, you know, similar to like you say, guests coming in, get the BVs right. How much time have we got? We've got 30 minutes to do these BVs. It doesn't work like that.
Right. It's interesting that though. Like I once interviewed Pharoah Munch. And
well, nice.
He told me about when he made Simon Says. And he said he'd been in a studio recently with like all the Creature Comforts. And it was like Erykah Badu would be in one room and such and such be in the next room. And they'd be all making these great songs. It was like a lovely studio. But when he made that record, he was in like a very uncomfortable studio in, I think he was saying it was summertime. It was super hot. The aircon machine was rattling and noisy. So they had to turn it off when he did a take. And it was like sweltering. And he's like, get the fuck up. And it like all came into the record and made the record the amazing thing that it is. Because he didn't want to spend ages in that booth. He wanted to go in, nail it, and get some fresh air sort of thing.
Wow.
So I actually think that the constraints encourage creativity. I think too much freedom, it works against the creative process. Need a certain level of freedom. You don't want to be like restricted. You must make this song, this type of song right now. That sucks. But like you need some level of boundary, some level of restriction, discomfort.
Yeah.
To really do it right. And for me, on this, part of what drove me with this album was like, if I don't do this now, will I do another record?
Discomfort.
Because I'm so, my life is so full. Mm. It's a challenge to do this. And actually, when I've got the window to record something, I'm like, I actually have to do this now.
Let's go, yeah.
Like, I have to do it now because if I wait for a good time to do this, then it might never come around.
Could be the bad time. That could be a bad time to do a thing you think is good.
Exactly. So I'm trying to just like jump on it. And when I had that first link up with Pitch and came away with all those beats, I came back to him within a day or two with like sketches of three different tracks, you know, and blended together so that they kind of had a bit of a feeling of like they could, you know, maybe be back to back on a record or something. Because I was like, I used to just take something away, write an entire song, very like, and keep going on that until, and producers probably like, where is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, you know, in fact, apologies to the producers out there that this happened with, who gave me great beats and I wrote something and it just never really ended up going anywhere because I was in that unrestricted creative zone and then other stuff in life gets in the way. I was like, I learned from that. And now I'm like, no, let me just quickly act on this. And even if it's a line on one of the ones that's turned out to be one of the best records on the album, I only put down a little line or two on that beat, but the feel of it and the sound of it was enough to be like, it could be something in this space. And then it's something for him to react to. And then it's also spurs me on, you know, rather than it just being an idea in my head, it actually now it physically exists in some form and it can be shared. And just keeping on that process led to this album being done in some ways quite quickly.
There's nothing more exciting than to hear something of a development on a beat or a song. Listen to that anecdote from Farrah Monch. Like, you must have been a pig in shit talking to Farrah Monch.
Literally, like, so tell me about when you... Like,
tell me about how you... You know,
craft, right? Yeah, that craft. Guy's... And also, there's something just very unique about him.
Yeah.
There's not really many... There's no one who's like that.
No.
He's his own thing, his own style.
I just get the feeling he's responsive to the environment, so it does not surprise me for a second that he's so dedicated to the craft. He's so top of his game. Just chuck him in the Amazon and give him a fucking mic and let's see what comes out.
Because
it really is environmental for a lot of MCs, isn't it?
Yeah. It's very interesting that. Like, but, I mean, he was an inspiration before. But to get the chance to meet him and hear about his craft I learned. I take notes.
He's
a
legend.
Take mental notes in these encounters, you know.
Serious cat. And it's those kind of people that act as like an okay sign. You know, if they're still doing it and they're doing it to that, no matter what's going on in all the other genres, cultures and decades, and you know, whether you're born this year or 20 years ago, what holds true is the strength in your ability and craft, isn't it?
And something I've found that is proof of that is in the streaming era that we live in now and the ways that people access music, sometimes they're accessing music without the backstory. In fact, often.
Yeah.
They have no idea who this tune is or what the context it comes from is, and they've not been told about it in a magazine or wherever else. Yeah. Like, it's just there. Yeah. And they respond to it and they're like, this sounds good. Yeah. I like it. And there are people whose records are like old tracks that have been around for ages that new people are getting into. Yeah. And you go to shows and you see there's young people and older people, because people just access the music in this way.
Yeah.
And that really shows you the stuff that stands the test of time. It shows you that true quality stands out and stays. Mm-hmm. And it remains a thing regardless of the comings and goings of like styles and sounds and I guess fads or whatever you would call it, like whatever the buzz of the moment is. Some stuff just stays
forever.
It's like, you know, it's really good.
That's a good point. I mean, my mind wandered to that point. You said, I thought Busta Rhymes and like the generational shift in his audience, that everyone knows, you know, rah, like a Dungeon Dragon based off of maybe Nicki Minaj or something. There'll be kids there and people our age and older. Some of them have their phones up the whole duration. Other people will be there barely moving because they've breakdanced too much in their time. And but what a dynamic, right?
It's mad. I mean, I'm no Busta Rhymes, but I've experienced some level of that personally.
Yeah,
so
yeah, cool,
I did a
show
in Brixton a few months ago, and a guy came up to me in the crowd holding a copy of my first album, CD copy. This is before we repressed, so we repressed it on vinyl, and we finally got it on digital again now, so it's now out there, The Essence, my first album. It's out there everywhere. But he came up to me, was like, this album means a lot to me. I'm the same age as this album.
Wow.
Like, excuse me? And he was like, my dad raised me on this. You know, like he talked, you know, I learned, and I love these
That's
records.
Incredible.
And he goes, I'm raising my kids listening to this. I was like, what? Oh. And there I am thinking there's three generations of a family where this means something. I had it in other circumstances. There's a producer actually I've worked with who he reached out to me because one of the albums I made is actually one in 2014, I did an album called The Misadventures of a Middleman. And he used to listen to that record with his mother. And then sadly, his mother passed away.
Oh, wow.
And he kind of connected to me online and told me of this. And we had like, I tried to be supportive of him and stuff. Yeah. And then he said, can I show you some beats and things? And he sent me some beats. The beats were phenomenal.
Wow.
I've recorded a bunch of stuff on that as well. That will come sometime soon as well. But like, I'm starting to realize these connections across different generations. This guy was much younger than me, you know, and there's like different Pitch 92. He's a different generation to me, you know, like he, one of the reasons why when I had that link up and he was playing me beats, it was like 9 out of 10 I was picking was because he knows my stuff. Mm. He listened to my stuff. He kind of grew up listening to my stuff. And so he didn't just send me any old beats, whatever. Like, he was like, you might like this. And in fact, even more than that, maybe there's some level of influence where the stuff he likes making is like, it's just common ground. That's part of the reason why the album's called Resonance, because instantly there was this feeling of resonance and connection on a creative level, you know, where it's just like, you know, echoes between different generations of like the style and the sound of music, where it's like instinctive.
Back and forth. It's a play, isn't it? It's a constant play. Hip hop is so, it's everywhere. Mm. It's always been the news. And if there is no connectivity between what's really going on the ground, no matter what age and what value does it actually have?
It's interesting. Like, I feel there's so many different styles and sounds and subgenres within it, and it changes so fast. And there's this whole thing of it being, a youth culture.
Mm.
And so as soon as you're past a certain age, it's like, you know, you're no longer the thing. You know,
get out of here.
But it's coming. It's come of age
where
maybe it is because of my maturity that like I'm interested in the perspective. So Andre 3000, when he came out with his flute album, he was, I think, trolling a bit when he said this, but he was like, what am I going to do as a rapper in my 40s, like to rap? Like, I'd rather play the flute in a way because like, I don't know what to say. I could talk about going for a colonoscopy or something.
Yes.
He's like, I don't think people want to hear that. There's a song by Fonte about health and about like, you know, physical issues and stuff like that in family members.
Mm.
That's an amazing record by someone in their 40s. I'm assuming he's in his 40s.
There you go, yeah.
Where I'm like, that is a deeply insightful thing and it's relatable. You know, it's not gross, by the way. It's a nice, good song.
Yeah, yeah.
I forget what it's called. I think it's called Expensive Genes. Expensive Genes, G-E-N. It's masterpiece. Check it out.
That's funny. I think, you know, in the case in point of Andre 3000, maybe he's just slightly lost his direction or connection with the street that he feels maybe brought him in?
I personally think he was just playing insane. Really? That thing I just quote. It's on some level.
Yeah, yeah, I get
where
you.
I think he does what he chooses to do. And let me be really clear about this. That man can do whatever he likes. he can do whatever he wants.
He can do whatever he wants. We love him.
The flute album, I'm here for it.
Yeah, do what you like, bro.
Like, yeah. He's definitely earned his seat at the table.
You don't have to say nothing. You just do it. Just do it.
So, but I do feel like that man has bars. Yeah. And I think he still has bars.
Yeah.
Because if you really have bars, then you probably still do.
Yeah.
So I think I cross my fingers, there'll be something in future where he's like, oh, actually, maybe I will talk about stuff. Mm-hmm. So I've heard things by him that are just ridiculously good on a bars level. So I don't have a doubt about that.
There's loads of lyricists out there, and they should all be taking a leaf in your book of just keeping the level high, keeping the releases going, the bar up, you know. Mm-hmm. I just love the fact that we got you in time ready for an eventual release.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're in full flight at the moment. Yeah. So, in fact...
This Friday, right?
Yeah, this Friday. I'm trying to figure out, when does this come out?
Don't worry, Kill Cat Podcast, don't let people down, baby.
Ah, you're fast on it. So, yeah, this Friday, I've got a single coming out with Pitch 92. It's called Heavyweights.
Wicked.
And there was a track called Heavyweight, singular, which came out at the last, just the end of last year, which was the first sort of warm-up, really, to this phase that we're entering into with this album with me and Pitch. But this is now a single from the rollout for the album. There's going to be a couple more singles in the coming months as well.
And then drop it when they want it.
And then the album will come out, you know. And this track is like the original Heavyweight was like the concept was a one-man posse cut. So there's me on there doing like different cadences and different voices, almost like different characters, you know.
That's and then hard.
I
was like,
but now I need to do the actual posse cut version. So I reached out to a group of top tier lyricists to get them involved in it as well. And also, like, I'm going to be real, like, I have a load of people I've been meaning to do things creatively with. And again, it's that mentality of, oh, wait for when's the right time for this? That? And then one of those people was Ty. And I'd always been like, yeah, me and Ty, we'll make a record together. He was super supportive of me and my career, like he was for the whole community. And I looked up to him, and there was common ground musically, and, you know, we connected all the time. He'd always shout me out and show love. And I was like, yeah, one day we'll make a record, I'm sure. In fact, I swear, vague memories of talking to him and Soweto Kinch, I think, about doing something together once years ago. And then he was gone. Like, you know, may he rest in peace. You know, rest in peace, love to his family and his loved ones. I'm sorry for your loss. Man. And it kind of was a wake-up call for me to... And I like to say it's the... He taught me a lot of lessons, you know, from the example he showed for us all. And that was the final one, which is like, don't wait for the perfect time. Just get on it. Just do things, you know. I learned that from that scenario. So with this track, I was like, let me just call up all the people. And again, to that point we talked about earlier, when people are like, can I help? Or like, when I was like, do you want to do this? The people are like, yeah, bro, let's go. Like, let's go. So I've got this ridiculous monster lineup of top tier lyricists.
Yeah. Well, I won't ask because it would be any point. You know, get to know yourself and check go, oh, yeah, check man.
I'm confident that there's not been a lineup like this in a long time.
Really?
Confident.
That's a beautiful sentiment to sign off on. And one I'd like to also add is rest in peace to my brother Coastie from 360 Physicals, who passed away. He's a lifelong friend within the scene, and he will be missed within the UK hip hop field, right?
100%. Sorry for your loss, brother. Yeah, man. May he rest in peace.
Coastie, yeah. He was very much so. 360 Physicals forever. And Poisonous Poets and more. Everyone that was in and still is a part of our journey and our landscape. Essa, you legend. Thank you so much for passing through.
Thanks for having me, bro. It's been fun.
Yeah, we are like in without a fashion serves you, right? You know what I mean? Hold tight, everybody, all the sharers and carers, people that have been supporting from the jump. And moreover, crime don't pay, neither do they. You look after yourself. Don't talk to anyone I wouldn't. Peace!
How do you do that, bro?